Of course, they did burn our camp in 1812, but whatever. Okay. All right, so we are in Hilchot Deot. I forgot what number this is for, whatever. We're going to get deeper into the halachos. Now we're up to halacha bet, Perek Aleph halacha bet. So the Rambam laid out the basic, if anybody needs one, if you want one, it's up on the shtenders there, okay? So the Rambam, okay. Boker Tov. I can't complain you're a little late because Minyan's like ended late, right? I can complain Minyan started late, but I can't. Like, okay. But I'm not sure it'll help me, so. Okay. The Yesh Ben. I need a smile. You gotta use one. There we go. Okay. Right. The Yesh. Looks so serious, you know. It's like. Okay. The Yesh. But it's cold in here? Oh, I biked, so I don't know that, yeah? Okay. V'yesh ben, do you want to turn the halacha is that if one person is cold, he rules.
I mean, that's why I sat over here.
Okay, if you feel yourself getting cold, we'll turn off the AC, you know? You should know, by the way, in the winter. Mamash, if you're sitting in a room, and you're so hot, and you open the window, and everybody's hot, and one guy in the room is chilly, halacha is you have to listen to him, you have to close the window. You can beat him up, but you have to close the window. Pardon? Nope. Hakol cholin bifnei atzina. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says that somehow cold can affect you and make you ill, and therefore you have to listen to the guy who's cold.
Is that here in the winter?
Nah, we don't need the winter. The heat of the fire of Torah. Yeah, of course
we're
it's heat.
A bunch
yeah.
of people in here.
In fact, I have to tell you that sometimes there are things that come up in the yeshiva, you know, and like it looks like we're being manipulative, but it didn't really occur to us. But on this topic, we are very manipulative. We keep this room the most comfortable, the most warm, the best place to be, whatever. We want to give you that added incentive to be in the basement.
Is this supposed to be open at night? Because I came back at like 9.
Let's not do this now. Let's get into Hilchos Deos. Okay, but remind me afterwards. Okay. V'yesh ben kol de'ah. V'yesh ben kol de'ah v'de'ah ha'rechoka m'mena b'k'tzeh ha'echad de'ot b'inoniot zu rechoka mizu. Okay? V'chol ha'de'ot yesh me'en de'ot she'hin la'adam mitchilat b'riyato l'fi teva gufo. The way it works is that character traits fall into ranges. And the reason that the Rambam lists them in Halacha Aleph is because he wants to, you know, understand that it's easier to define the extremes. Okay? The middle is much harder to define. Right? You don't want to be, you know, overly stingy, but you also don't want to be overly giving because that can be unhealthy. Right? If you're in your room, and there's someone in the room who comes back every night at 3 o'clock in the morning, makes a tremendous amount of noise, can't fall asleep without loud music, has no earphones, and does this every night, you're not sleeping, whatever. It's not considered a good midah, right, to a good character trait, to just sort of say, you know, I want to be open-minded and I want to, you know, be positive, and he obviously needs it, whatever. Because at a certain point, you have to find that balance. It's not healthy for you, it's also not healthy for him, right? So how do you find the balance, okay? The yesh mehen, and additionally, you should know that we all have different genetically implanted, that's not what the Rambam says, but that's how I'm going to define it, genetically implanted character maps. It's not an accident that there's one person who's naturally relaxed and chilled and one person who's naturally, you know, sort of more volatile, more fiery, right? You with us here, Rabbi? Right? Okay. Who's more volatile, right? These are things that are in our nature, right? And part of the challenge is going to be, you know, we've talked about this again and again, but the Muslim movement believed, or if you saw Salanta was a big proponent of this, Chafetz Chaim was a big proponent of this, that before you can figure out, you know, how to make yourself who you want to be, you have to figure out where you are, right? There are three pieces to every process of development, okay? What would you say they are? There are three stages. Three parts to development, to character development, to accomplishment. It doesn't matter. You want to grow in learning. You want to become less angry. You want to become wealthy. There are three stages in every process. Want to guess what they are? What's the first?
Awareness.
Pardon? No. Well, everything is about awareness. That's definitely true. That's a theme, right? Pardon? Okay. First thing is you got to know what your goal is. You have to decide what you want. You meet somebody. Maybe he's not losing weight. First question is. Does he want to lose weight? Has he decided that he wants to lose weight? Has he decided, or gain weight? Doesn't matter, right? So the first thing is, you have to know what your goal is. Like, if you have a friend, and he's just, he talks too much. He's just always talking. And he has nice things to say, but because he says so many nice things all the time, at a certain point, you can't handle it. But he doesn't realize that that's an issue. So of course he's not going to change. He hasn't set a goal, right? So the first thing is, you have to decide you have a goal. I don't know. What's the second stage? Nope.
Figure out where you are.
Let's say you feel you have to lose weight. So somebody says, I'm going to lose weight, so he starts running every day. But if he doesn't know where he's at, a month later, he suddenly realizes, like, he doesn't know if he's losing weight, so he weighs himself. It doesn't tell him anything. Right? If you bike in the morning and work out on weights at night, and you're building muscle, you're actually gaining weight when your muscles grow, right? You have to know. So you have to figure out where you want to go, and you have to figure out where you are. When you figure out where you are, then you can set a system, and that's the third stage, for how to get from where you are to where you want to go. Make sense? This is true for everything in life, right? That's what's complicated about this. The first stage is not complicated. The first stage, you can figure out where you want to get to. A person, if you take time for the introspection, and I personally think that tefillah is very much wrapped up in this process of introspection. In fact, there are benchmarks in davening. There are places within tefillah that allow me to measure every single one of these character traits, right? So it's not that difficult to figure out where you want to get to. Right? Everybody here has some character issue that if they would really think about it, they would probably want to work on, I imagine. If you don't, that's another issue, right? But how to implement that, how to get that, and even how to figure out where you are. Very difficult. Okay, so let's see, right? V'yesh mehen de'ot she'tivo shel adam zeh mechuvan, ve'atid lekabel otam b'mira yoter mishar de'ot. So one of the things that helps in this process is you have to know what your nature is, right? You have certain character traits and issues that are part of your nature. And you have to know that there are certain things that you're just, it's just easier for you to do, right? There are some people here who are naturally, they have the midah of zrizut. Zrizut is what we talked about, pardon?
Enthusiasm?
Maybe enthusiasm, yeah, maybe. I don't know if I'd call enthusiasm so much as drive. There's certain people in this world, they're just driven. They were born driven. I have a daughter like that, okay? She has her challenges through last sleep, but she's a very driven person. So she will spend 4 or 5 hours at night, and this is from since she was in third grade, right? She will spend 4 or 5 hours a night, you know, studying the test and doing it and going backwards and forwards, and, you know, it takes up a lot of my time because she's so driven that she's not going to let me off the hook, right? So if that's her nature, right, then that helps her to know how to work on different things, right? Okay, so you have to know, you know, what things are easy for you to accomplish. Right, v'yesh men she'enam le'adam mitchilat b'riyato, ela lamadotam me'acherim or she'nisnei lahen me'atzmo l'fi machshava she'alta b'libo. There are character traits that you didn't. They're not inborn to you. They're things that you learn. They're things that you discover from others, and you may not even realize how much of them you've acquired and that they're difficult for you to do. And it's important to know the difference between them. Sometimes it's important just because it can help you prioritize what to work on. And sometimes because it'll help you to realize the fact that you got somewhere does not guarantee you're going to stay there. Because if it's something that isn't natural to you, then you have to continue to work on it. I heard a story of a famous Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Rucham Lovitz. And they say of him, right, I think it's an important thing to smile. There are cultures, for example, in India, where they have laughing, what do they call them? Laughing groups, I don't know if there's a name for it. And I once saw a documentary on this on, like, the Discovery Channel. They have these large groups. They go down to the, what river is it? The Ganges, whatever, right? Our pronunciation, anyway. They go down there, hundreds of them, and they, in the morning, before they go off to their day, they have laugh therapy sessions. And they just sit there. It's the most incredible thing to see. They just, like, hundreds of people, and someone claps their hand, and everyone goes, ha, 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 ha. And they've discovered, you know, that this benefits you. It helps you. It creates certain processes in the brain. Whatever. Without going into it. So I think it's true. You know, the Mishnah Perek Avos says, "Hevi kabel kol adam b'sever panim yafa." You're supposed to receive every human being with a positive, with a cheerful, a friendly, a, you know, smiling countenance, right? And you know, like, you don't want to walk into a room and somebody's sitting there, right? And imagine you walk into my office and I'm looking at the Rambam and I look at them. So it just doesn't, doesn't create the energy for a conversation. But if I'm sitting in my office and I look up, right? So it's a different energy. So some people have it easy to do that. It's not a mila that I do that. I got that from my parents. It's just natural. So this particular Rav, he apparently had a tough time with this. So he would stand in front of the mirror for a few minutes every morning to practice smiling. He didn't naturally smile. It just wasn't his countenance, and he recognized it was an important thing to do, so he practiced it. So that may seem a little extreme, but it's the example that's important, right? Right? Osha shama shazu adea tovalo, ubara ulelech, v'inigat smobach nikva b'libo. Right? This is a very important line. I'm going to read this again. It's the end of Halacha Bet. Osha shama shazu adea tovalo. Or he heard, he intuited, someone told him, that this particular character trait, this particular quality, right, is good for him. Uvara uilelech, and it's worthy that he walk, that he follow this path, right? And he practices this until it becomes set in his heart. In other words, what the Rambam here is alluding to, and he's going to get into this, is really a very simple process to acquire a character trait, which is, you have to do it, right? Nike was right. You have to act on it. You have to behave. You have to decide what behavior model you would like to have, and you have to do it.
How do you fight something that's like in your nature, like that you were born with?
Well, give an example.
Like, I don't know. Your parents are always angry or something.
Okay.
And you were born with that. You're kind of born with like that anger, like easy to anger.
Oh, okay. So we're going to see that, but I'll give you an example. In fact, I'll give you a great example. This is a good example.
Even if you can hold back that anger, like from showing it, like showing people that anger, like you might still feel it inside. Like.
I want you to know, by the way, and I'll give you an example, that this question is the root of the first two parakim of Hilchos Deos. Because there is absolutely a method that the Rambam is giving to do this, and it absolutely works. Whether people are willing to invest the effort to work on it is an interesting question. I've met people who don't work on these things because they don't think that the issue is such a flaw. And I've met people who don't work on these things because they don't believe they can change their character. And I absolutely agree that it's very, very difficult. It's probably the most difficult thing there is to change your character, but it is absolutely doable. You have a tremendous bracha. You know, when I'm somewhere and we're having discussions with students who are like 40s and 50s, it's very, very hard to change something that's been ingrained for 40 years. Much, much easier to do at your age, right? First of all, you are an island at this point to some degree. You're not married. You don't have kids. You're not tied down by all sorts of externalities. So you really can choose certain behavior models if you want to work on them. But I'll give you an example. Because, I this whole year is all about the different personalities who are here sharing with you what they feel works for them. That's basically what it is. Rabbi Aaron's sharing with you, this is how I develop my relationship with God. And then you have to decide if it fits you or works for you. So on this topic, all I can do is share with you what works for me. And one of the ways that I have found that you can begin to work on this is by keeping the extremes in your mind. You know, it's when you're around people who are not at extremes, they're more or less somewhere in the middle. So it's not as apparent. You don't realize the danger of a character flaw. But every once in a while, an extreme comes into your life. And that extreme serves to help you to realize that you need to find the middle ground. Okay? And if I had to pick a good example of this, it would probably be driving. Okay? Just like everything else in the world, there are extreme drivers, and there are, I don't know, what's the middle of extreme?
Intermediate.
Well, not intermediate, not defensive, because you can be an extremely defensive driver. There are moderate. I guess you would call them moderate. In other words, if you're driving down the highway, and some guy is flying by you at 190 kilometers an hour. That's an extreme. That's just an accident waiting to happen. You know, if I'm in the left lane, okay, especially driving in Israel, and you can notice these things even when you're on the buses, right? And I'm in the left lane, and some guy wants to pass, which is a natural thing, something to happen in the left lane on the highway, but he drives right up to your bumper, his lights are on, he's blinking his lights, he's got his, right? That's dangerous. Like, if you have to stop for whatever the reason, you're both going to die, right? So what's the natural thing that a moderate driver does? Just gets out of the way. So when you see drivers like that, like I always tell, you know, my daughter, because she's a relatively new driver for a couple of years, those are the drivers you want to stay away from. If a guy is driving like that, if a guy is zipping through traffic at 190 kilometers an hour, then you want to get in the right lane. You want to wait a while until he's out of your periphery. So one day, I have to give a shiur in Yeshiva University. I'm on a trip. And I get up on time, more or less, to Washington Heights. And I can't find a parking space. Parking in that area is not a simple thing to do. I didn't know back then where the garages are and where to park. So I'm driving around, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. I try very hard to be on time. I don't always succeed, but I try because I think that, especially when you're the guy giving the shiur, there's a tremendous element of Chilul Hashem if you get there late. I just think for shiurim and weddings, funerals. But so I'm getting challenged. And I had passed the parking lot, but they wanted a ridiculous amount of money, like 25 or 30 bucks, I think it was, for like the first hour, and just a ridiculous amount of money. So I finally decided, look, I'll wait a few more minutes. If I don't find a parking space, I'm just going to have to go park in a parking lot. And as that's happening, so I see across the street that I'm driving on a parking space, right? Now, really, there was a double yellow line, and I wasn't able to make a U-turn, but et chata'ay ani maskir, I made an illegal U-turn. Okay, I crossed the now I'm on tape, right? So I crossed the line, and I pulled past the parking lot, right? And I'm about to back in. And I'm backing into the parking lot. And as I'm backing into the parking lot, like diagonal parking lot, right, I hear this screech, okay? And you know, kind of like I'm looking in the mirror, and I see this other car slam in there. So now I'm like this, and this woman is like this, and we're both in the parking lot, right? So I'm like, you know, like there was no one there. I was backing in, you know. It's like a classic New York experience. So I look up in the mirror to say something like, you know, like I'm whatever. And I see this face in the mirror, okay, going like this. Right? This woman is hysterical. Maybe she saw it further. I don't know, whatever, right? So I'm reasonably sure that I'm, you know, that I was there first, whatever. And I know that I'm not going to find another parking space, right? So I do, and I say this by admission, a horrendous thing. It's mamash a horrendous thing. What should you do in a situation like that, just out of curiosity? No, just drive away. Give her the spot. That's what you should do. That's my opinion. That's my opinion, whatever. But, okay, you can disagree. We'll see if you disagree when we finish the chazdeiros. That's my opinion, right? It's just not worth it. There are things in this life worth fighting for. A parking space in New York City is not one of them. But that's just my opinion. But it's easy for me to say that opinion now sitting in the old city. I did not have the opinion that morning. And I feel like I'm going to a shiur, the mitzvah, whatever. So I'm looking up, and, you know, like I kind of like, you know, trying to look, you know, I'm going to look, you know, I was here. She can't hear me. She's like, oh. So I figure, okay, you know what? I'm just going to sit for 5 minutes. I figure I'll give myself 5 minutes, and I'll see if she just realizes and drives away. So I just sit there, right? And I pull out a safer or a newspaper, whatever I had, and I start reading, right? Okay? And I figure she'll see that I'm reading whatever, and she'll realize whatever. Well, this makes her more hysterical. From time to time, I look up in the mirror, and I see her other day. And then I finally realize, okay, this is ridiculous. I'm acting like a three-year-old. It's just silly. And so I drive off, and I go find a parking space, whatever it is. And, you know, it's a little annoying, but it's not up there on the scale of to be annoyed about in your day. And which was my second mistake, because what I really should have done is I should have apologized. Because at the end of the day, if she's that fanatical, like, who knows what's going on there? Well, fine. So I go find them out, and now I'm running to make the shoe on time. I walk into YU to the, I think it was in Reuben Hall. And I go to find, I go up the stairs in the elevator, and I come out on the sixth floor, or wherever it was, and I see this woman is standing at the counter talking to some security person. Obviously, she needs to be in this building, right? So I realize this is the woman from the parking space. And at this point, she looks very calm and collected, right? So I feel like, okay, this is an opportunity. Like, you don't usually get to fix your mistakes. You have an opportunity for tikkun. I thought, like, should I say something? Should I not say something? So I walked over to her, even though I had to run. And I said, hello, good morning. And she looks at me, she says, good morning. And I said, you don't recognize me. She's looking at me, she doesn't get it. I'm the guy from the parking space. Okay, then she gets like a little embarrassed. But I said, no, really, I just want to apologize. I feel better. What was the worst part of the story was that it turns out that this woman is a pediatric neurosurgeon. And that the reason she was late for a lecture she was giving was because she was doing some surgical procedure or consulting in Columbia Presbyterian Hospital on 168th Street, trying to save a child's life. At which point, I feel like this little. But that's an example, for me, of the extreme of anger. Like, anger makes you not think straight, right? So the question that you ask is, how do you get from that extreme, right, to remove yourself from that extreme? Well, as we're going to see, you practice the opposite. If you have an extreme of anger, you have to start behaving sickeningly tolerant. If you have an extreme of stinginess, You have to start being loose with your money. If you and not to get there, not to be there, but because if you go from one extreme to the other extreme, you will eventually arrive at the middle. But we're going to see this in the Rambam. Okay? Shtei ktzavot, halacha gimel. Okay? Harechokot zu mizu, shebechol deya vedeya, einan derech tova. Being at an extreme is not good. That's a klal. The reason it's important to be aware of these extremes is because these extremes are not good. It's just not good. It's never good to be an extreme. And this is a dangerous thing to say, because if extremes are never good, then you can't say never, because that would be an extreme. So I'm going to leave you to pontificate on the philosophy of that. But the general idea is clear. It's just not good to be an extreme. You want to give me an example of an extreme that's good? Can you think of an extreme that's good? Moshe, you got to be able to come up with an extreme that you think is good.
Point to the Rambam?
No, in general, in life. Is there an extreme?
You wouldn't call it extreme.
Point to
the
Rambam,
by definition,
you should never
it's
get
extreme.
Angry.
It's like past the good point.
Okay. Makes sense. Okay?
Extreme and is good when it's needed. Like when you said, like when you had to go on the ambush up the hill.
No, I don't agree. That was the way that I dealt with that situation, to use anger to get up that hill. But that doesn't mean that that was the ideal. The ideal would be, because you got to realize, you know, the Gemara says that when a person is angry, it's kilu tafasato avodah zarah. A person who kilu oved avodah zarah. A person who is angry, it's as though he's worshipping idolatry. Right? And we're going to, let me ask you a question. What is anger?
What about when a mother gives birth?
Pardon?
What about when a mother gives birth?
Well, I'm not the expert on that topic, but what do you mean?
I don't think we're on.
So, what about it?
I think basically, when a mother gives birth, someone's given his analogy, like, that basically there needs to be a lot of emotion put into that.
What's the extreme there? That's an extreme situation. But it doesn't mean that. I'll give you an example. Let's say a mother. Let's say. No. I want you to understand something. You learn a lot about where you're at. You don't learn, you know what? The Gemara says, Da ta adam, bekoso, bekiso, ubekaso. Okay, I think we mentioned this once, okay? You know a lot about a person in three situations. You can learn a lot about a person from three things. From his kos, when he's drunk, from his pocket. You go over to the guy you think he's your best friend. You say, listen, I'm really in trouble. I need to borrow $100. You'll find out what a good friend he is. Okay? And kas, anger. Now, sitting around here, it's hard to know whether anybody's extreme, right? But when you're in extreme situations, if you're on a plane and, a hijacker jumps up and hijacks the plane, that's an extreme situation. You find out how people behave. People who are in their nature good people, they behave in good ways. And people who are in their nature selfish people, it brings out their selfishness. So extreme situations actually allow you to discover what your character flaws are. You say birth. I'll give you an example of birth. When a woman is in birth, in labor pain, if she hasn't taken an epidural and she's in tremendous pain, that's definitely an extreme situation. Okay, so suppose a woman's in labor and her husband's there and he's trying to help her, and he asks her if she wants a cup of water, but she's in the middle of a contraction. You don't know if I want a cup of water? And she starts cursing him out, screaming at him, grabs a telephone, throws it at him. There's something off with that. So you wouldn't sit down with her at that... One second. You wouldn't sit down with her at that moment and advise her that she needs therapy. But when things calm down and the baby is hopefully born healthy, then you got to take a step back and say, if that's how you react in an extreme situation, you got anger issues to work on, your relationship needs work, whatever it might be. Right? So you can learn a lot about yourself in your extreme. But since we mentioned anger, so let me ask you a question. What is anger? Like, what is anger?
Rambam is going to say that you should have an extreme of not anger.
Anger is actually one of the only character flaws. There are two character flaws that the Rambam believes one should go to the other extreme. One of them is anger, and the other one is arrogance. Okay?
Does anger we talk a lot about aligning your will with Hashem, so anger would be like saying, getting mad at Hashem and saying, the world is like, why isn't the world going my way?
If a person really has a deep relationship with Hashem, I don't know that they'd be able to get angry. In fact, we could debate this if you want, but my sense is that deep anger is an indication that there's a problem in your relationship with Hashem. I mean, I don't know. Let's take something simple. Right? I can understand somebody gets angry if he watches someone he loves hit, God forbid, lo aleinu, by a hit-and-run driver. But if we're sitting at the table, and I'm getting all excited, and I accidentally slam this, and it goes all over your clothes, spills all over your clothes, right? It's pretty obvious, an accident. I feel bad, right? If you go off the deep end, and you're enraged and you start screaming, so then everybody here would forget about the coffee and they'd realize, chas shalom, that you've got an anger issue, right? Let's say, but why is that anger happening? What's the root of that anger? Now, if you really had a deep relationship with Hashem, if you really believe that Hashem created everything, and you really believe that that Hashem decided in this moment, for whatever the reason, it's not for me to decide. Like, I could make a case of saying, okay, I'm going to pick this up and throw it at you, and then I can say Hashem obviously wanted you to, right? But that wouldn't help anything, because then I would have to struggle with why I was the vehicle for such a thing. But if this coffee gets spilled on you, it means Hashem wants you to have coffee on you. How could you get angry about that? You would rather have to ask yourself, okay, there's something I'm supposed to be learning here, and that's an opportunity. And it might be, by the way, that you get an opportunity to learn something from a relatively easy example of having coffee on your shirt. You'd rather that than have to learn it, God forbid, from something more serious, right? So why do you get angry? Yeah? Oh, okay, well, why do you get angry? Why do you get angry when coffee's on your shirt? Pardon? Pardon?
You think, oh, it's so, like, you don't realize that getting coffee on you isn't in the world.
I don't think it's about realization. I used to think that. I don't think that. I think it's deeper than that. You wanted to say?
You're doubting what's going on. I don't think Hashem is the relationship with Hashem is the most important aspect of why you get angry.
I think it's one aspect, but I will agree with you, it's not the most important. I can't say it's not the most important, but there is something you need to...
perspective on what's going on and what's important.
Mm-mm. It's not about... It's true that your perspective is flawed, but it's not because you lost perspective. Well, let's make that simpler. Anger is all about you. People get angry because it's all about them. Right? If you go to, I don't know, if you're a Rav and you go to a wedding, and it's a student you're really close with, right? And you go to the wedding, you're standing at the chuppah, right? And they don't call you up to give a bracha. You're a big, you know, I don't know, huge gadol ador, the chief rabbi of Israel. And they don't call you up to give a bracha, and you get upset about it. Why are you upset about it? You're upset about it because... you want honor. That's about you. That's your ego issue. If it wasn't about you, if you weren't that important to you, right, then you wouldn't get angry. So anger is an indication that you need to work on you. You're getting upset because the coffee's on you. How dare you spill on me? I'm important. But if you're not important, if there are things that are much bigger than you, it's harder to get angry. Yeah.
If you're to spill coffee on my brother, I'd get angry.
Pardon?
If you were to spill coffee on my brother, I'd get angry.
Were to spill coffee because he's my brother.
No, because he's someone who I care about and you're doing something irrational.
That's right. So you care. Well, you care about someone. Let me give you an extreme example. Okay? Chances are... you read the paper in the last day or two?
About what?
Anything.
Okay.
So if you read a paper, chances are you will read somewhere in that newspaper someone who experienced difficulty, inflicted pain. There was a tragic story of a bus driver who was dropping off kids, 3-year-old girl. I don't know if you heard the story happen this week. Terrible story. They did something wrong. And if you were standing there, right, and it's your sister, God forbid. You have any sisters? Okay, so if it was your sister, God forbid, right? So then then you'd get angry. But it's not your sister, and just reading on the paper, so you don't get angry, right? Why? Because it's not your sister, and you're not so connected to it, so it's not about you.
But it makes sense that you're going to have a strong reaction if something bad.
Absolutely.
Oh,
absolutely, you should have a strong reaction. But when that strong reaction is anger, generally speaking, there's something you need to work on. And by the way, one of the questions you have to ask is what is it you're angry about? That's a whole separate topic, yeah?
You're saying that you shouldn't get angry because you're not realizing you get angry because you're not realizing that there's something bigger than you, that not everything's related to you.
Mm-hmm.
So then you can apply the same thing to happiness and say that you should realize that there's something bigger than you and not everything relates to you. So you shouldn't be happy because it's not directly related to you.
Well, what is happiness? No. 1 second. What is happiness?
I'm not using it as the opposite of anger.
No. It's a good question, right? You shouldn't get happy because it's not about you. What is happiness? Anybody remember? We talked about this once, I think. No?
Knowing yourself.
Nope. The root of happiness is purpose. Happiness is all about purpose. The reason we experience joy, the reason that it says, V'samachta v'chagecha, and you shall rejoice on your festival at Sukkot, instead of on Pesach, that's the you have a mitzvah of Simcha and all the chagim, but it's mentioned by Sukkot, is because Pesach is when you first plant, Shavuot is first fruits, but Sukkot is when you bring in the harvest. And that's when the whole process makes sense. So there's purpose to it. So meach tesamach ra'im ovim, you have tremendous simcha under a chuppah. All of a sudden, the long journey, all the girls you dated, the ones who dumped you, the ones you dumped, it all makes sense because it led you up to this moment. Real simcha is all about purpose. So you experience simcha exactly because something is happening and there's a purpose to it. Now, the fact that that purpose isn't just about you, but you are a vehicle and you have the privilege of being involved in a process, that's a whole other discussion. Right? By the way, I'll give you an extreme example of this. I've met people, you know, people think like, I don't know, somebody wronged you. Somebody wronged you. I don't know, somebody cheated your dad out of money, which is maybe more noble than they cheated you out of money. Right? Somebody cheated your dad out of money, ruined his life, I don't know how to say this. And you have tremendous anger to this person. I've met people who are angry, and you think like, and maybe we're having a discussion, I say, you know, you should let go of that anger, forgive him. And you'll say to me, maybe, but he doesn't deserve to be forgiven, because he's never expressed remorse, and he ruined my father's life, right? See, I definitely think the Rambam thinks this, that's a mistake when it comes, it's a misperception when it comes to what anger is. Because the perception is that your anger is about him, and he doesn't deserve you not to have anger. But anger has nothing to do with the other person. I've met people who are angry at people who have been dead for 20 years. This fellow may not even know you're angry at him. He may not care anything. It has nothing to do with him. Right? Anger is all about you. Because the anger that you experience, it consumes you. It poisons you. It has a negative effect on you. Right? By the way, what does forgiveness mean? Forgiveness, forgiving, to be forgiving, is to be for giving, to be all about giving. To be able to let go. Okay? By the way, I think, and we could debate this, that this is the root of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is all about learning to let go. Yeah?
I mean, if I read a story about like a terrorist who did something awful to somebody, I would still be angry at the terrorist even if it wasn't like my family or somebody I cared about, somebody I didn't even know. Like, if I read a story about a terrorist who, you know, went into a home and killed a baby or something like that, like which did happen, right? Like, that makes me angry.
So let's think about this for a minute. I've met Holocaust survivors, and I can just note the little smidgen that I think I can relate to. I wouldn't go so far as to assume that we can understand the experiences of a Holocaust survivor. That's my perception, you know. But I've met Holocaust survivors who are, over the years, I mean, you know, I'm 46. So by the time I was your age, I was meeting people who were much younger as Holocaust survivors. So you have the ability to have conversations, and I learned over the years that there are Holocaust survivors who don't want to talk about it, and there's some Holocaust survivors who really do want to talk about it. And you're going to meet a couple of them this year who are amazing individuals, B'ezrat Hashem, who are going to share their stories with you. And one of the things I've noted is that there are Holocaust survivors who became so consumed by the anger, it destroyed their lives. And there's some people, I have a friend who's in my show, Zimmerman, and he went through horrendous experiences in the Holocaust. He can't talk about it without tearing. To this day, 60 years later. But the man doesn't have an angry bone in his body. He's a happy person. He's always smiling, right? And I talked to him about this once. I asked him, like, how do you go through experiences like that? He told me that after the Holocaust, for about 10 years, he was an extremely angry person. And it affected everything. It was ruining his relationships. And he decided at one point in his life that they took away his family, they took away his parents, they took away whatever. They weren't going to take away his life. And so he overcame his anger because he was determined not to give them that victory. And he feels that he let go of the anger that he has towards Nazi Germany and even towards the world. Now, that doesn't mean that he accepts what they did. It doesn't mean that he doesn't speak out against it and fight against it, etc. You know, let's take an example that's a little closer to home. You know, you look at what goes on in the Middle East here. You know, the Goldstone Report. Now, I've met people who are very politically active. And they write letters, and they demonstrate, and they do a thing. And I do some stuff like that, not as much as some people I know. One of the reasons that I limit how much I do that is because I found that when you really get involved with that, it makes you angry, right? And I don't want to be an angry person. So how do you do that and not be angry? Well, there is at the root of that anger, right? How could they do this to me? How could they do this to us? But if you could step back and take a look at this puzzle and maybe convince yourself, maybe it's all psychological, that this picture, right, is much bigger than the Arab terrorist who's doing this to the Jewish baby. There's something much bigger going on, then you can let go of your anger. I don't, by the way, personally believe that what's going on in the Middle East, one of the mistakes people make is that they believe that there's something logical at the root of all this. If there's something logical at the root of it all, and there is a lot of logic to it, then you can figure out what's wrong with it. You know, hatred is not logical. You meet someone, I don't know, Hamas. Hamas's hatred is not logical. If Hamas could let go of their hatred, and if they could really, you know, sort of look at the picture, they could have accomplished so much more and been so far ahead, right? And gotten almost everything that they want from a totally different perspective, but they're consumed by anger. That's my perspective. I don't want to be consumed by anger. But, you know, if you believe, I believe personally that the reason that this is all going on is because we need to fix something. We as a Jewish people are making certain mistakes. So whenever we make mistakes in history, processes come about, for whatever the reason, that mess things up. Now, that's dangerously close to me saying I know why Hashem is doing it, and that's not what I'm saying. But I'm definitely saying that the work we need to do is to fix ourselves much more than to stop Arab anti-Semitism. Right? And you can do that if it's not just about you. But you don't have to make it that complicated. Just make it simple. If you're in your room and someone steps on your bed, you're angry because it's about you. But if you realize this is an opportunity, because this fellow's never lived in a dorm before, and he doesn't realize that, you know, we have to respect each other's space. And you can say, you know, Nebuch, like, he needs to learn something. And I'd love to get to a point where, in my relationship with him, he's ready to hear what I have to say. Then you won't be angry. You'll just be growing. Make sense? Now, the goal is to find the middle. And our challenge still remains, and it's going to take a few more halachos, to figure out where exactly the middle is. You want to say something?
Yeah. I just feel like he's very, like...
The Rambam.
Yeah, no, just the same way, like, you wouldn't go to any Holocaust survivor and ever consider saying something like, you know, maybe you should be less, like, extreme with your storytelling and, like, reminiscing about the Holocaust. Like, just the same way people will have different reactions to different things, and that's, nobody's saying that's an issue. I feel like Rambam wants everybody to be very hard, and, like, some people are, you know, like, more serious, and some people are more loose, and that's what makes things interesting. Having, you know, a different... There's like, some Mishnah where, like, the guy offers, like, some king, you know, a carpet that's, like, a million different colors, and then the carpet that's, like, only one color. He says the one that's a lot of different colors. You know, it's more interesting, and it's more diverse, and, like, that's what Hashem intended, that you have some people who bring different things to the table.
Well, I don't know. It's true. I don't know, and that's a good attitude to have when you're dealing with other people's anger.
I'm,
right?
I'm not talking about anger specifically.
Any character trait. It's healthy to look at the world and say, there are extremes in the world, and I can learn from all of them. And that allows me not to get angry about those extremes. What the Rambam here is talking, in your case, if you're reading this, is only about Mikey Snow. In other words, the starting point here, we're going to get to Perek Vav, where we can expand the circle. But the first five Prakim is all about, it's about me, finding my moderation. And look, I don't know that you ever get there, but we're always on a journey. You know, if you look at the next week's parsha, Lech Lecha, right? So how come everywhere you look, it's all about Lech? Right? Lech, what do you mean Lech Lecha? It's the first time Hashem ever speaks to Avram Avinu, and he says, go. What do you mean go? Come, sit, relax. How do we start Shabbos? What's the first thing? Before the Lecha Dodi even. Lechun Ranana. Do you know how Lechun Ranana is translated in the Siddur?
Come, let us sing.
It's a mistranslation. I think because it's not comfortable people to say, go and sing. It should say, come and sing. But that's not what it says. It says, go and sing. Lechu, Lecha Dodi. Only all the way at the end of Lecha Dodi. Why? Because we're on a journey. And I don't know that you're supposed to get there. So if you're on a journey to moderation, you may not get there, but that'll be a healthy process. And the first stage will be to recognize where you want to get to and to recognize what things we need to work on. And we'll have to continue and see how we do that. But as usual, I've eaten up my time. To be continued tomorrow, same time, same channel. Be there or be square. Okay.